Hi, my name is Dave Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. My guest today is Chris Willis. Chris is the CMO of Axios HQ, which makes software that helps organizations manage their essential communications. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, Chris, as you know, I like to start these conversations with what I call a MythBuster question. And the topic that you and I have been talking about is about marketing, growing marketing results. And the myth I want to explore with you is, in order to grow marketing results, you always need more money and resources. Is that true or not true?
No, so true. Just amazing. Yes, we absolutely want more, more, more. Provocative statement of the day. That is not always true. So I'm living in a world right now. I just moved to Axios HQ in January. And moving into a business in its third year, Series A, usually first CMO comes in and has to turn the lights on and get the first lead, build the first relationship with a content syndication or a media outlet and figure out how to hand that lead off to the sales organization. That is not what I discovered when I got to Axios HQ. That is not the business that I work at. The lights are on, the lights are bright. And it's interesting, I was in a meeting with our CEO and he said, you've been here for a couple months, you haven't asked for anything. You haven't said you want more of anything. And that led to sort of the position that I'm taking right now, which is I don't need more. If anything, I'd like to get us to a point of needing less. We've spent a lot of money on a lot of things to drive a lot of impact. But now, coming into the business, my primary objective is finding the dials and the levers that allow us to do and spend less. We all live in a world where more is more, but let's get to a point where more is more is impactful. And I don't think that I'm there right now. I think that finding those efficiency dials and those nonlinear growth levers, I don't think that we need more until we're at a point where we can do more with it.
Yeah, that's really a powerful statement. So talk to me about how you get there, how you really do the analysis to figure out where the efficiency opportunities are.
I think in a lot of businesses, there's a lot of data that's not being examined. And I'm very lucky in the organization that I'm in that we do have access to data and we can find and build hypotheses around what we think might be happening and then test against those. What you tend to see is that there's areas in the funnel from top of funnel down to the closed opportunity that have room for improvement. And so working through like, how are we doing at the very top of the funnel? And what are we acquiring? How are we acquiring it? Is this a demand capture or is this a demand creation? Are the leads that are moving through the funnel the right leads? Have we identified a proper ICP? Do we know that that ICP is performing in excess of non-ICP? From a handoff standpoint, is that first handoff from marketing to whomever it might be? In my case, it's a BDR team. Is that handoff working? Is it designed effectively? Once the BDRs get it, are they given the right information? Are they able to convert? If so, how often? What is the percentage of dropout leading into the sales organization? And how are they positioned? What is the actual process by which they're working? What does the sales cycle look like? How does their meeting run? What is their message? What is the hook that they're using? Is that hook effective? Are we delivering value messaging? And are we able to convince people to buy? And that whole chain, which I dramatically simplified, has multiple areas where you could lead improvement that will make everything at the top more valuable and put more out the bottom. And that's really where we've been exploring and focusing in this business is where can we make these quick, low-hanging fruit tweaks that will get us to the next level of scale. One of the things that we're working on right now in real time is messaging and positioning. How do we talk about what we do? How do we talk about the value of what we do? And how do we make that hook more impactful? How do we get the people that are excited to become people that buy? And if we can do that, when we do that, again, the value of our pipeline, the value of our lead gen, the value of the meetings that the BDRs create, all much greater. So again, I don't need to spend more. I just need to convert at a higher rate.
So it sounds like this first step is a giant process mapping exercise, that piece where
Absolutely.
you're really laying out step by step what happens really for every persona almost, right? For every product, for every persona, really how they move, how they come into the funnel, how they move through the funnel, how they move through the sales process. And there's so many variables along the way, right? There's humans who are interacting with this. There's marketing automation, there's offers, there's websites. How do you kind of get to the heart of each of those steps? And do you see this kind of a linear process, or do you see it kind of a series of circles that people go through? Or, it's a very complicated map that you're trying to analyze.
It is, and I'm fairly simple. So I'm gonna try and take things off the list. Let's identify things that aren't problems. So we know the volume, for instance, of leads that we need to be creating for each one of our territories. If we can just achieve that, that's one thing that we can take off the table. We don't have a volume issue. Same thing with meetings. If we can achieve our meeting goal, we don't have, that's not an issue. Cross it off. That doesn't mean that MQLs or meetings wouldn't be part of a problem, but volume is not a problem. Quality might be a problem. Targeting might be a problem. Timeliness might be a problem, but we've taken one thing off and we're just working through the business. And this is a thing that I've done in every business. We work through the business trying to take those things off. What can we control? What do we know is working? Drop it off the list. Fix the next thing. And this is a project that has to be done with the entire front office, working with sales, marketing, account management, onboarding, everybody that touches this process. Eliminate pieces, focus on the things that are left.
So what's the leverage opportunity when you're doing that? So if you're focusing on messaging, let's say, or the conversion from MQL to SQL by a salesperson, there's all these leverage opportunities. How do you quantify that leverage? Do you get like, and I know there's no easy answer about this, but do you think of like you can make a 10% improvement by working on these qualitative steps? Do you think of it as like making a 200% improvement? How do you kind of think about the impact you can make quantitatively through these qualitative steps?
It's all step-based. So, I mean, if we're talking about the sales conversion, right? If you're getting 2 out of every 10 buyers to successfully buy your product, what if it's 3? What do we need to do to get to 3? I mean, math-wise, I have a theater degree from a liberal arts college. I'm not a math person, but I do know that that's 20% conversion, and we would move to 30% conversion, and we would be a completely different business. But mentally, like, in my head, it's just, we just want one more person, like, in this batch of folks, one more person to say yes. What do we need to do that? And that seems like an attainable objective, like one more person. But again, that's a 10% increase in conversion rate. That's a big deal in a business of our size, in any business. And so that's what we're aiming for at that bottom of the funnel. At the top of the funnel, we're just looking to hit those top-level goals. We think in terms of, hot leads, MQLs that come in through the demo request. We have a specific number of those because we have a conversion rate associated with those. Those are going to convert at a much higher rate than a content lead, for instance. And then we have webinar leads that are going to convert at an even lower rate. So again, same thing. Little incremental growth in each one of those conversions lowers the requirement, the volume requirement that we need for each of those. If we can see the conversion from hot leads going from 30% to 35%, that lowers the overall volume requirement that we have. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to lower our output, but it gives us the ability to make decisions. Do we lower our output? Do we lower our spend to generate those demo leads because we don't need as many because we're converting higher? And we spend that money on awareness so that we make the entire process easier. Or do we keep the volume requirement and sell more? Those are fantastic conversations to be having. It's, I mean, make, do you want more money, or do you want to do more that'll make us more money? Those are your options. And so that incremental growth in all of those stages, just little attainable steps, have such an impact. We tend to look at things holistically. We got to solve this whole problem. We get this whole engine, solve the whole thing. And I'm looking at it like a clear plastic box with gears in it and a nice little door with a handle. And things are going into the little plastic box and things should be coming out. We should like what's coming in from a volume standpoint. We should like the speed that it's passing through and the volume that's coming out the other end. And if we don't, we should be able to open the door on a little plastic box, tweak around and fix it. And just those little changes, it's not a whole big machine. It's just a little change that I made with a little tiny screwdriver, kind of you would use with your glasses. That has impact.
Yeah.
Don't look at the whole picture. Look at the small things that are going to drive the entire process.
Like that's the power of really understanding the steps and understanding each of those. But those do require some investment, right? So if you're going to improve your messaging, if you're going to improve your landing pages, if you're going to do sales training, if you're going to get better offers, better content, all of those require investments along the way, right? They're not totally free. Sometimes they're free because you just, you know, if you come up with a new message, you get it on the website yourself, it is virtually free. Obviously, they're paying you, but and other or other staff members. But sometimes you need to employ graphic designers or agencies or something to put this stuff together. How do you think about those investments as you open up every one of those boxes or improve every one of those steps? Are they no-brainer investments that, of course, we need a better offer? Yeah, landing page. Are these kind of all no-brainer investments?
Absolutely.
Or do you have to quantify and justify every one of those?
No, I'm not even thinking about that. I'm making bets on the entire budget that we have allocated to this process. And so this year, coming into 2024, we reduced, for instance, our paid ad spend by a reasonable percentage. Because we know we're doing other work that's going to increase the value of our paid ad results. If we weren't doing any of this work, then you would imagine that we would have to probably grow our spend from last year to get the same results that we were going to get this year at a larger size. But the bet is that the tweaking and dialing and levering that we're doing elsewhere in the engine is going to reduce the overall requirement, and we can spend that money elsewhere. So putting that into the pieces that are going to fuel the overall growth doesn't feel like a thing that I think about at all, actually. The fact that we're going to spend some money on, for instance, automation, to speed up our ability to convert early stage leads into handoffs, into SQLs. That, to your using your words, that is a no-brainer. We can take 30,000 cold records and automate them and turn them into money? We should do that. And if that works, we should triple our spend on that. And I'm not even going to think about it, because there's always money for great things. If something works, we can afford to spend money on it. It's moving things out that don't work.
Yeah. So you talked about this concept of making bets, and I think about it the same way. So as an agency, we're always talking to clients about, you know, you may want to make an investment in this channel or that channel or improve this or build this piece of content. And I do sometimes think about it as making bets, small bets, and then expanding on those as you go, as you've said. So, you know, what makes a CMO better at making those bets? Because you've obviously had a lot of experience. You've been doing this for a long time. You know, but, you know, for the average CMO, maybe they're brand new in their job. What makes them better and better? And what makes us get better at making those bets over time?
The information available to you from the people that you're placing bets with. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I have a lot of trust in my team. I have and always have and do now have an amazing demand leader that I'm partnered with to do this. I have in this organization and in my past organization, fantastic content leaders that are creating the material and the bait that we're going to be using. And I'm not betting on my own. I am standing at, I mean, in my mind, this is not blackjack. This is roulette. This is across a big table, and I'm putting chips everywhere or hedging. But being able to play that hedge game, you got to have people that have the knowledge, data, and intelligence to tell you where to put it. I do not want to walk in and bet everything on red and hope that I'm right. I want that person with the math in their head that looks down and says, put it there, there, there. If we do these, our risk is low. We're still going to do what we need to do, but the upside here is very big. And that's what makes this interesting. It's not a single hand. I'm not just putting down all of my money on one hand of blackjack. It's across the table with a hedge in mind to be able to make sure that we're successful.
Yeah, it really is a risk versus upside equation, isn't it? So where do you, in that whole process, where do you generally like to start first? Or is it always dependent on the unique situation? Or is there, you know, in your experience, do you usually come into a situation like this and say, oh, usually I get the most leverage from this bet because that has the lowest risk and the lowest return? In other words, where should CMOs look first?
I like to start with messaging. I think that every organization could improve their messaging. And that's where you make or break your sales process. If you say the right things, if you have the right value language, if you can prove the right ROI for the audience that you're selling into, that makes a huge difference. And so I think in every business that I've been in, that's been a primary focus, is how do we continually evolve and get better and closer to the buyer and what the buyer actually needs. That hook, I mean, I think of, you know, any business that I've been in, and we can get people excited. We can get them into the boat. So my hook works, but it's that little barb on the hook that keeps the fish on the hook. Mm. That's the thing. And that's where, I mean, it's inexpensive if you have the people in house, or if you're the person, it's inexpensive to sharpen that barb. And the outcome of that is hugely valuable. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I want to do after that. I want to look at, you know, our paid ad strategy. I want to see who we're going after, how much time we're spending in our echo chamber versus going beyond that. It's great when people are excited about what you're selling, but it's better when people that actually have a business problem find you. And so there are two different strategies to get at that, and two different volume plays. I can get a lot of people that are excited that might not buy. It's harder to find people that don't know you exist that actually have your business problem. But the value of that might be higher. So again, that hedging your bets of how much do I put towards the volume of people that are excited versus how much work do I put into finding the actual buyers that are out there? Because these excited people convert at a relatively low level. These people are going to convert at a much higher level because they actually have a business problem that matches the thing that we sell and the messaging that we've created and the ROI that we can prove.
Yeah.
And so working through that process, like, that's where coming in, I get really excited.
And there's so much power in that. I have a dirty little secret. I actually collect bad emails, bad sales emails. I have a folder in my email Outlook, and it's called bad sales emails. And there are people that send me emails that want to sell me something, and they're just, the message is wrong. I can't tell what they do for a living. Sometimes it's untargeted. So they're selling me what I do for a living. They're just saying, hey, can we have a meeting? Now tell me what's in it for me. It's all of these, like, and I imagine their conversion rates are fairly low, you know, with these, they could be sending out millions of emails, but if the message is bad. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. There's just so much leverage in getting that right. What's the role of, you know, market research in that, in your experience in B2B? In B2C, it feels like there's a lot of market research that happens, but in B2B, is there a role for market research in trying to figure out the message, or is it more intuitive, or is it more individual conversations that happen with buyers? How do you think about it?
There absolutely is. Our customers, I have had a career of working at companies that sell products that generally people don't know they need. So medicine, we're selling medicine, but first we need to find you, make you believe you're sick, and then get you to buy this thing that you've never heard of. And I think that having that relationship with your audience, building a community around you of people that are living this experience, helps you to bring reality and an organic feel to your message. Nobody today, and to your point, with a bad email folder, nobody wants to be sold to. Nobody wants to be marketed to. Nobody wants to feel like this is a pitch. They want to feel like you're trying to genuinely help them. And I think that in by and large, business-to-business software companies want that. They're trying to help. So working with your audience to tell that story is a lot more impactful. I honestly don't care what I say as a marketer, but I'm very involved and engaged in what our customers have to say. And I think when they tell our story, it's a lot more impactful. So I was at a conference last week. I saw our CEO on stage talking with one of our largest customers. We don't need to say anything if they say the right things. And what they say is what I want to learn from. I didn't prep that customer on what to say. I want to hear what she says because that's what I want to use going forward.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Well, when is it time to scale the budget? When do you feel like you've got the messaging, you've connected the dots properly with all the steps, you've kind of made enough improvement? It feels like in marketing, there's always more to improve, and there's always different ways to test things. But when do you feel like you have enough to then scale the business, scale the advertising to start to get more, rather than just get more efficiency? When you kind of make that shift?
The very simple answer is when it's all working, right? And it's the same thing that you're going to face when you're looking to go out and get funding is have you proven your sales model? Can you call your shot? And right now in the business, that's where we're aiming for is we need to be able to call our shot. We need to put something in and know what's going to come out the other end. And so all those things that we've talked about and all those different conversion points, all of those matter. When they're all operating consistently, even if I don't like, to be fair, even if I don't like where they are, if we have consistency over several quarters, we know our ICP. We know that it's going to perform better than non-ICP. We know our conversion rates, and we know that we can hit them consistently. We know what's going to happen as an opportunity enters the sales cycle, and we know what's going to come out the other end. Now we can pour money on that because it's a machine that works. And the simplicity with which I said that, like, oh, obviously that's what kills 90% of startups. Is that you never get to that consistency. You don't understand why somebody bought. You don't understand what it takes to get the next person to buy. Everything is new. Everything is different. And you hear that in businesses like, well, it's hard to know why they buy because everybody buys for different reasons. And then you're selling for all kinds of different reasons. And we've all lived through that where you customize your messaging so much to every single opportunity, there's no commonality. So there's nothing to repeat. Every time you talk to somebody, you're telling something different. We have customers that want to get bags of garbage to the dump, customers that want to get kids to school, customers that want to get to work. Why don't you just say it's a car? Just sell the car. It does all those things. But we're customizing our message so much that I don't know how to grow from here because which one of these things do we care most about? Do we add more things? It's too much. And so going back to creating that repeatability, that's the live or die moment. If we can make that work, we're going to grow as a business. If we can't make that work and we need to customize our messaging every time, it means that we don't have a product. It means we're a services organization and we're customizing everything for everybody. That's not what any of us aspire to be.
Yeah. Well, I love the analogy. You're really creating that engine, and when the engine works, then you can pour more money on it. I had a recent podcast interview, and we had a good discussion about heroics, right? Is d do you value heroics? Do you reward heroics in the organization? It feels like when you need heroes to make the pipeline work, you don't have an engine that really works. You really want, feels like you want an engine where ordinary people, ordinary things can make the whole system work from end to end. You don't need superstars all the way through. Do you agree with that statement, or do you, how do you feel about it?
I do 100%. I mean, because one, you can't fund a business that runs because one person's awesome. Like that's not It's not helpful. That's how you start a business. That's what a founder is. That's what early stage employees become, is we're going to save the day. And you see that happen all the time. Like, we're going to brute force this thing until it works. We're going to keep it alive. But when you're brute forcing to make it work, you need to be building the repeatability underneath that. Because if you never get to that, those people are going to burn out and leave. And then your hero doesn't work there anymore. And that's damaging.
Yeah. So you got to really ultimately create that engine that works from end to end. So let's say, we get it working, you've got all those pieces in place. Where's your first go-to place to start spending more money to kind of fill the funnel and grow it faster? Do you have any kind of go-to channels that work effectively for you?
I do. I mean, that's when you start spending on awareness. Like, we all have, I mean, anybody that's listening to this that's in marketing knows that it's very difficult to tell anybody above you in the organization that you want to spend on awareness. Because what does that even mean? Like, what are you going to do? Like, social? You're gonna start a TikTok? Okay, maybe. But the point of it is, and the way that I measure my awareness spend is that it's the lubrication of the sales process. It makes it easier to get that first lead because people have heard of you. It makes it easier for somebody to pick up the phone when you call because, oh, I'm familiar with your business. It makes it easier for the economic buyer to approve the purchase because, yeah, I just saw that on the YouTubes. Like, it makes everything smoother. So, can I measure mass awareness? No, it's hard. But can I measure it in conversion rate? I would expect that if this, then we should see these things. We should see conversion go up. Fantastic. The whole process gets easier. So that's where, if you look like 2017 timeframe Grammarly, they spent, I feel like the number was between $200,000 and $300,000 a month advertising on YouTube. So every pre-roll that you saw was Grammarly. Everybody knows Grammarly. Like, your mom knows Grammarly. She might not use it, but she knows who they are. And that kind of mass awareness makes it easy for them to move into the business. That's what we all want. I want it to be easy. And so once we solve the big, hard problems, let's make everything on top of that easy. Again, it's looking for those ways to grow the business with levers, that awareness is a lever. Now I pour money on that and we grow exponentially.
I love that. That's the perfect summary. Solve all the problems so that it becomes easy. That's really good. But I really like your approach to thinking about awareness. A lot of our clients in the kind of the performance marketing space really just want to spend on a lower funnel, direct response.
Put a dollar in, get a lead out.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
And it's great when it works, but it sounds like your approach is much more holistic, thinking about the entire process end to end. Fixing it really at every step, and then thinking about strategic ways you can accelerate growth once you have all those pieces in place. It's pretty
Exactly.
powerful. Yeah. Well, Chris, it's been a really good conversation. Thank you for sharing this. If people want to get in touch with you just to further the conversation, what's the best way to reach you?
I'm at CP Willis on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way, or you could hit up my website at www.axioshq.com.
Great. Thank you again, Chris. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me.